Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Second hour DDC. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here live at First Horizon Park. Beautiful day here in downtown Nashville. Sounds first pitch at 6:35. This evening, let's head to Memphis. Let's bring in Gary Parrish. Lots of news going on in the college basketball world, and of course, the Grizzlies game 3 in Minnesota tonight. Gary, how we doing?
I'm great. You guys okay?
We're doing fantastic. No complaints. Finally, we get some nice weather, which is welcome. And how about the kaboom? I mean, you're in that world, so maybe it was a kaboom for you. But when I saw Jay Wright leaving Villanova, I was stunned. Obviously, we're so used to in today's sports world of everything being a big production and, you know, have the farewell tour. Not with Jay Wright.
Yeah, word started to circulate a little bit yesterday afternoon. But I can tell you there wasn't really anybody talking about this, say, a week ago. So from that perspective, it was shocking, you know, for a variety of reasons. This is a guy who has incredible job security, like really more or less a lifetime contract at Villanova, which of course is in his hometown. He just had a great season, you know, went to the Final Four, had a preseason top 20 team set to come back. And he's only 60 years old in a sport where men routinely coach into their 70s. So for all of those reasons, I'm not sure anybody outside of Jay Wright expected, you know, Villanova's loss to Kansas in the Final Four to be his final game as a college basketball coach. But when you start talking to people close to Jay over the past 24 hours and sort of just recognizing how much the sport has changed, you know, over the past couple of years, it starts to make a little more sense. You know, one of the points I made in a column for CBS Sports is that, you know, these men are paid incredible amounts of money to do these jobs, but these jobs have never been more demanding, more complex, and more chaotic because of a lot of different things that all happened at roughly the same time and caused a seismic shift in college athletics. Name, image, and likeness rights becoming a reality. The one-time transfer waiver becoming a reality. Real alternative options to college for high school prospects becoming a reality. Most coaches are willing to deal with it because, you know, what are your options? But I don't know many who think that the sport is in a more enjoyable place right now than it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago, because once upon a time, you were mostly just recruiting high school prospects and trying to build programs over a 2 or 3 or even 4 year period. Now, if everything's year to year, you know, you're losing players to transfer every year. Every program in America is. You've got to recruit high school prospects, and you got to re-recruit them. You got to try to keep them. You got to be in the portal to make up for anything you might lose, and it's just an exhausting way to, again, make a lot of money. But you know, the thing I think is important to note is that once some of these guys, not all of them, but some of them, have made enough money where they don't need to make it anymore, then they're faced with an obvious question. If this isn't enjoyable anymore, why am I continuing to do it? And that's an oversimplified explanation for why Jay Wright walked away, but it's that what I just said is in there somewhere in pushing him in that direction.
There's whispers of him going to the NBA. Do you believe that? Do you buy that? Or do you think he's literally just retiring for what you just laid out?
I think he's literally just retiring to spend more time with his family, which means spend some time with his family, because that's the other thing about these jobs is that, you know, I don't want to say they're 365 day a year jobs, but it is something close to that. You know, the season is overwhelming. The off season has become, in many ways, even more overwhelming. And I should be clear: nobody needs to feel sorry for these guys. You know, they're making, in some cases, $5, $6, $7 million to do these jobs. But one of the points I made to a friend is that, you know, I don't even know what the toughest job you could possibly have is, but the cliched one that people go to all the time is ditch digging, right? Like, you know, you could be out digging ditches.
Picking rocks, I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so for the sake of the conversation, let's just call that a very difficult job. Now, imagine if they paid you $5 million a year to do that job. You'd be like, okay, I don't really enjoy it. It's exhausting, and I never get a day off, but it's $5 million a year, so I'm going to do it. But maybe once you made $30 million a year, you would decide, I don't want to dig ditches anymore. I've got enough money. I don't have to go do that today, tomorrow, so I'm not going to. And that's clearly not an apples-to-apples comparison, but I think you get the point. More and more often when I talk to college basketball coaches, they express frustration about the demands on their time more than they express joy about doing the job. And it doesn't mean that they don't still find joy in the job, but a lot of frustration does exist. And the truth is, if you want to be a high-major college basketball coach, the time you can spend with your family, like real time, vacations and stuff, very, very limited these days. And so I think Jay is walking away from that. Now, I will never rule out the possibility that he returns to college coaching someday or, you know, coaches in the NBA someday. He'll certainly have the opportunities if he wants to, and he's only 60. You know, you can get bored in retirement, over a span of a few months or a few years. So, as always, we'll see. But to answer your initial question, I'd be shocked if he's coaching in the NBA anytime soon. Like, he did not leave this job to be the next coach of the Lakers or to be the next coach of the Sixers. He left this job because he's exhausted and just frankly wants to relax a little bit.
Speaking with Gary Parrish, through our conversations, Gary, with Jerry Stackhouse, I was just convincing myself. I thought Scottie Pippen Jr. might actually come back because of NIL, third-party collectives, all that good stuff today. And how many times – that's the first part. The second one is, how many times do we see the player of the year come back in Oscar Tshiebwe? What did you make of those two moves?
Well, you know, we don't often see the player of the year come back. In fact, Oscar Tshiebwe is the first one to do it since Tyler Hansbrough did it in 2008, of course, at North Carolina. But when you start breaking down Oscar Tshiebwe's realistic options, this was always the more sensible one. As long as he just wasn't ready to be done with college, period. End of story. Oscar Tshiebwe is a tremendous college basketball player. Evidence being he's the reigning national player of the year. But he's not a great NBA prospect because he doesn't really shoot it from the perimeter. He's not great at guarding in space. And, you know, if you can't do those two things, there's not great opportunities for you as an NBA prospect. Doesn't mean you can't make it in the NBA, but they're not that interested in you on a surface level. So Oscar Tshiebwe's realistic options were enter the draft and, I don't know, be picked 53rd and hope to, sign a two-year guaranteed deal worth maybe $900,000 or something like that. A more likely scenario might have been a two-way deal where he's back and forth between an NBA franchise and the G League. And if you're in the G League, you're playing in front of nobody and flying commercial flights, sitting in row 31 middle seat to be on a streaming service. And if you're on an NBA roster, as a second-round pick rookie, you're probably, buried on the bench, barely playing at all. So that's option A. And then option B is come back to Kentucky, be the best player in college basketball for one of the biggest brands in college basketball. And because of name, image, and likeness rights, maybe make $2 million, even $3 million. So this hasn't always been true, but because name, image, and likeness rights are reality, it is now. There are a number of college basketball players who can make way more money legally playing college basketball next season than they could make playing professionally, as long as professionally is anything short of the NBA. And for a lot of these guys, it is. So with Oscar Tshiebwe's decision, it is unusual but unsurprising given where we are with name, image, and likeness rights. And I think you're going to see other guys do this as well. Armando Bacot at North Carolina has done it. Drew Timmy at Gonzaga, most people believe, is also going to do it. Jaime Jaquez Jr. at UCLA has done it. These are all guys who are projected second-round picks, but college basketball stars. And simply put, they can make more money in college than they can make as a second-round pick. As it pertains to Scottie Pippen Jr., I think you got to understand the family dynamics a little bit. Under normal circumstances, maybe a guy like him would come back to college because with name, image, and likeness rights, for all the reasons we just discussed, there's a lot of money to be made. But, you know, he comes from a family of wealth. Maybe the money isn't as important to him as just getting on with his professional career, whatever form that takes. You know, as is the case with all young people in all walks of life, folks are motivated by different things. So what makes sense for Oscar Tshiebwe might not make sense for Scottie Pippen, and vice versa. You know, Kofi Coburn, on the same day that Oscar Tshiebwe decided he was coming back to school for obvious reasons, Kofi Coburn announced he's leaving school for basically the opposite reason. So that's just sort of the way that sport is going to work going forward. But name, image, and likeness rights is going to lure more players back to campus than we had previously watched happen.
Do you see Scottie Pippen as a what you described with Tshiebwe, would you put Pippen in that same category? Would be fortunate to be drafted, has to maybe be a fringe guy? Where do you look at him on the pro projection?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he's a first-round pick. Yeah, I guess I could see somebody taking a flyer on him in the second round because he is skilled. He is a scorer. He is the son of a professional athlete, and that's not just a throwaway comment. That is something that matters to NBA executives now, whether it's Steph Curry, Golden State, or Jaren Jackson Jr. With the Grizzlies. You know, you're looking at prospects right now, Jabari Smith at Auburn, son of a professional basketball player, A.J. Griffin at Duke, son of a professional basketball player. There is a trend that NBA executives have picked up on that the sons of professional athletes have a better chance than maybe the alternative of making it because they grew up in it. They know what it looks like. They know what it takes to, you know, be employed at that level. And so that's something that'll work in his favor as well. Will I be surprised if he's, you know, in the rotation for an NBA team next season? Yes, I will be surprised. But I've been wrong about draft prospects enough over the years to never say never and never rule anything out. So there's a long list of guys in the NBA right now with prominent roles that I didn't think were going to make it.
Oh, there's no question. That probably gives him hope,
right,
Gary? And let me bounce this off you, your outside perspective. I see him as a guy that would be hard to project because of the way he plays. He's very unique. I'm not sure anybody plays quite like him with his head fakes and twists and getting fouled and the way he plays. I'm not sure how that translates one way or the other because there haven't been too many guys like him.
Right. I mean, you know, like coming out of college, there weren't many guys like Steph Curry, but people were still sort of dismissive of it. Or
yes,
counted it a little bit because he's little, he's skinny, is he really a point guard? You know, and he ends up going lower in the draft than he obviously should have because at this point he's considered an all-time great. You know, physical limitations are the one thing that will create issues for prospects more than anything else. But then there are constant examples of people who overcome those physical limitations. Fred VanVleet didn't get drafted, even though he was an All-American at Wichita State who helped the team get to the Final Four, who helped the team, you know, get a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Why did that guy not get drafted? He was a point guard who could run your team, win, and make shots. Well, because he's a little smaller than you want. He's not really a great athlete, but now he's an NBA All-Star. Jalen Brunson, same deal. The National Player of the Year at Villanova, won two national championships. I mean, that was a proven commodity. But why was he a low pick in the draft? Because he's a little smaller than you would ideally like somebody to be, not really a great athlete, just scored 41 points in a playoff game. He's about to make more than $100 million on his next contract. And if you were to tell me that Scottie Pippen Jr. could, you know, be something like that, somebody who's discounted for obvious reasons as an NBA prospect coming out of college, but still figures out a way to make it in that league because he's an incredibly unique player with an undeniable skill set. Again, I wouldn't rule that out.
On the way out, Gary, Grizz get it done tonight? Do they get it done in the series?
I think they get it done tonight, and yes, I think they win the series. But, you know, this isn't the gap between Minnesota and Memphis is not as large as a 2-7 series might suggest it would be. The Grizzlies were terrific all regular season, second-best record in the NBA, but they're still led by a couple of 22-year-olds, and the third-best player is probably 23-year-old Desmond Bane. Teams like this are not equipped to typically advance in the NBA playoffs, but Ja Morant is not your typical 22-year-old. So, again, I think that they get through this one. And then probably, definitely an underdog in a series against Golden State, even though they would be the higher-seeded team with home court advantage. But, you know, folks in Memphis are really excited, not necessarily about what's going to happen this postseason, although they are clearly excited about that. But when you start looking at NBA franchises, you know, all 30 of them, which ones are best positioned to be really terrific and compete for titles over the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you could reasonably argue that there's not a franchise in the NBA that's better positioned right now than that Grizzlies franchise.
Yeah, and an owner says he's willing to keep them together too, which is also a key piece of that. Gary, really appreciate the visit as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll enjoy the ride. Hopefully it'll be a fun one, and we'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate you guys. Take care. Bye.
All right, Gary Parrish, CBS. Good stuff from him. Talking college basketball and old Grizzlies. Game 3 tonight in Minnesota. We'll come back. More DDC next. You know, the draft is a week from today. We're actually going to hear a little bit of the Titans press conference at the bottom of the hour. We'll go live. We'll hear how John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and how they talk about the draft process. But they're probably going to get asked about A.J. Brown, too, so we'll hear how they handle those questions. Our draft coverage will be next Thursday and Friday. That's presented by Social Furniture, Apple Collision Centers, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and the Nashville Sheriff's Office. So join us. We'll be broadcasting live Thursday night for the first round at 3rd and Home, which is right there to the left. See?
It's right there.
Can you see?
I see it.
It's right there to the left. Everybody out there listening, see it? I'm pointing. It's right there. You can watch all of our live coverage of the draft on the game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. Did see a funny text. Unnamed texter, put your name on there. I'm going to give you credit for the funny text. Is this a radio show or a construction site? They can hear what's going on.
Yep.
I didn't know that was going out over the air, but they are doing a lot of loud beating and banging out in left field and center field. Well, left center.
What do we think they're doing? Is it?
I don't know. We're probably building something.
Well, we know what. I'm just wondering if that's been revealed. What it is? Is
so
it
they have
residents,
to,
or is it more?
They have to grind up all the rock first.
Yeah.
Because Nashville's on rock. I don't know. But I don't know what's going to go there.
But hey, welcome to downtown Nashville. Somebody's always doing something. We see two cranes off to our right. I mean, we're three that I can see. Down the right field line, beyond the foul poles, you look off in the distance. You got the two bulldozers over here doing their thing. The jackhammer guy. I mean, that's Nashville. That's Nashville every day, right?
Pretty much.
Somebody's building something or moving something.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's college basketball, the way Gary Parrish laid it out. Right.
Hey,
we talked with Candace Lee yesterday. We talked with David Ubbin yesterday. Third party collectives. Candace talked about who they're now affiliated with, what, NBC Sports, and this is the new and I'm sure a lot of these guys, and Gary laid it out well. Like, that's, and we've brought this up before, like, you get to a certain point in life when you've made your money and you're good, if you're not cool with where things are, you can just walk away and say, you know what, I'm just, like, I'm kind of done. I don't want to fight these battles anymore. And I'm sure, I mean, Coach K could have done this many, many years ago, but he's made his money. I mean, he got paid $10 million a year. He could have walked away a long time ago. But this today's game probably isn't for these guys that have been doing it for decades.
Now, you guys have gotten on me. I have been saying this now for a couple years that, and you can tell, for me, look, I love basketball. I love college basketball. I played college basketball. I'll always have an interest. But it saddens me, the product, when it is evolving the way it is. I don't think it's getting better. And I'm kind of like the old fuddy-dud, right, the get-off-my-lawn guy. But I do wonder, if Jay Wright is looking at the product down the road and saying, this is just not what, this is not for me. Now, I'm going to bring Elijah in on this. Verify what I'm saying here. How many one-and-dones has Villanova had? Villanova is one of the last programs that, just my view of it, they recruit high school guys, they build teams. That, to me, is the exciting part. That's what I enjoy a lot about college basketball, besides just watching a good game. I just like programs that, hey, they've got these guys back. They've built this nucleus. They've got the next guys coming up. This is just a fun program that keeps evolving and growing together. But Elijah, am I right? They hadn't had a lot of transfers and this and that, at least for a long time.
Not a ton. I think the only one and done that I can think of is DiVincenzo, and he probably wouldn't have gone one and done if he didn't go stupid in the first half of that national championship game. I mean, he probably would have come back the next year because he didn't start. But he had that one really, really good game, and then his draft stock rose, and then he bounced a year early. And really, the only player I could think of that either transferred in or transferred out prematurely was Javon Quinterly, who's at Alabama now. And that was like the only like McDonald's five-star guy that Jay Wright recruited there, and he didn't get a lot of playing time his first year and ended up transferring out. But yeah, Villanova's definitely more unique in terms of they've kind of been your more traditional college basketball program for the last decade.
All right, let's see what the Titans have to say. A little pre-draft presser coming up on the other side. We'll do that next year on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, let's head over to the Titans facility, hear what they have to say.
And then going back to free agency, Brian Gardner in the pro department, and certainly Ben Marino with the contract negotiation. So with that, excited about next week and another step and another part of the process as we try to put the 2022 Tennessee Titans team together. For questions.
I mean, how much movement is there still to do? What's the last week like leading up to the draft?
Yeah, just going back through. We watched through a couple guys last night as a group. You start the comparisons. This player versus that player. It may be vertically in the position stack, and maybe horizontally, one position versus another position. You're trying to predict guys that are going to go up ahead of where you're picking. Sometimes that's a bit of a crapshoot. So, some dialogue as we try to fine tune here heading into next week.
John, I just talked to AJ with everything that's been going on with the receiver market. Where do you stand?
Yeah, we've had some discussions with his reps. When he was here a couple weeks ago, I talked to him, and we're working through that. Not going to get into any details with contract negotiations. Never have really done that. But we've made it public about how we feel about AJ and how we wanted to be a part of this football team.
What are your thoughts on how the receiver market has exploded so much when you look at these recent contracts?
Yeah, I don't know what the trends are with that, T, but it's interesting to look at and where that has shifted. Every year it seems like certain positions, there's ebbs and flows with where those markets goes. A couple years ago, the safety market was down. That's when I think we got Kenny Vaccaro. He was out there for a while, and we were fortunate enough that he was there in August. So, it just kind of year to year how those market trends are.
Well, I think we're trying to get the best football player that's available for our football team. You're going to need every position at some point. I mean, we saw that last year with 91 different guys that lined up for us. So you're going to need good football players at a lot of different positions over the course of a season. So just try to put ourselves in the best position to take the best player that we think helps our football team.
John, you had a situation, I guess AJ's talking with Debo Samuel on an Instagram video talking about the terms of the negotiations. You got him requesting a trade. Does any of this make you feel more urgency when it comes to the AJ situation?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about where we're at. I've talked to AJ's reps. AJ knows how we feel about him, how much he means to this football team, and I haven't seen any Instagram videos or Snapchats or Vimeos or any of that kind of stuff.
You've got the same agent representing
three of the four receivers who are in this situation? Does that complicate things in terms of who's first and them all wanting most money?
Yeah, I don't really – I mean, we don't really have any control over who reps who. That's up to the individual player and who they select and who they feel, you know, most comfortable with handling their, you know, their situation. Does it complicate things? I don't know. You know, our focus right now is with our football team.
Is there any chance that AJ could be traded between now and
that? I think I've spoke on that several times now. So do not foresee that happening. Tracking the plane, John. Yeah, there was O-linemen certainly at stops that I saw, and you know, there were players at other positions, you know, at some of those stops that I went to. You know, and that's one of the things that Mike and I were excited about, was being able to get back out this spring, be around these prospects on their pro days, watch them work on the field, spend some time with them after their pro days, you know, visiting with them, getting to know them. You know, maybe you get a little bit more time at the school than you do, you know, certainly in that combine interview where it's 15 or 18 minutes, whatever that is. So you get a little bit more normalcy. The player's in his environment. He's in a meeting room that he's used to on his campus. Get a better feel for, you know, the real guy, as opposed to, you know, maybe what the rat race of the combine is, as those guys are being shuffled from one room to the next room to the next room, and it's a bit of a whirlwind for him.
Picking up on there, can you talk through Zion Johnson and Kenyon Green?
Yeah, both those guys, I mean, the big, strong players. Both guys have played a couple different positions. You know, really, Zion has played three positions. Kenyon's played, you know, both guard and tackle. They're strong. They're good movers. You know, both of those guys were good when we met with those guys. And, you know, they're good prospects.
Mike, can you chime in there? I know you've got a special insight from Matt.
No, I don't think I have anything to add on Zion. I mean, obviously, he played next to Tyler, and he's an excellent player, an excellent person. You know, really, really good person. I'm sorry?
Did he live with your son?
Yeah, he roomed with Tyler, yeah. They probably didn't say much. Tyler doesn't say a whole lot, and Zion doesn't say a whole lot.
In terms of positions of need for your roster, just in terms of sheer numbers, receiver, tight end, offensive line, inside linebacker, where you're.
It's a lot of positions, Terry. We need a lot.
But how does this draft stack up depth-wise in some of those spots?
Yeah, I think as we've gone through the process, you know, there's been some position groups that have shown a little more volume, you know, maybe than other positions. But, you know, we feel like that, you know, the positions that can help our football team, again, as I stated earlier, you know, you're never going to know what position you're going to need throughout the course of an NFL season. And there's players that really at every position that we feel good about. You know, now whether they're there when you're able to pick, that's another thing. If I had that crystal ball, the draft would be a lot easier. But no, I think that where, you know, our football team is currently and what's available is it's a good thing.
And not having a second round pick right now, does that make it harder to maneuver and get where you need to go?
Potentially, you know, there's creative ways that you can, you know, strategize and try to gain draft capital. You know, whether it's sliding back from where we're at, whether it's involving, you know, future picks, you know, in next year or the following year, you know, there's ways to kind of put things together to try to put yourself in position to get the player you want.
There's much interest in that kind of thing now, John. I mean, you get phone calls, you know, in terms of moving down, or is that closer to the draft day, you know, or
yeah, I think it's probably where we're at, John, in the draft where we're picking. That's a little bit more as you get closer to your pick. You know, it's a different situation back when we had the first pick where, I mean, you're trying to strategize to, you know, to get what you can get from that.
Obviously, both of you guys hardcore football guys. Mike, is there anything you look for in players as a head coach that maybe or something that gets you excited or something that's a red flag that's different compared to maybe a personnel guy with the coaching background himself?
Well, I mean, I think we want to have guys that we trust. I think that's important. You know, we want to evaluate the trust and the ability, and hopefully find those where they match up with high level of trust and high level of ability. You try to, I think, where we're at now is trying to get to is this somebody that you want to see every day and coach every day and have in your meetings? And that's what we try to ask the position coaches, obviously, try to find a vision for them and a role and what they're going to do and what they eventually may do for us. I think for me, there is a lot of maybe just traits, character traits that I'm looking for. And then, then we'll go and I'll go and watch the tape. And I trust everybody's opinion, but I really, really want to bring great people onto this team.
John talked about how nice it was to get back out on the road this spring. How much did it help you to familiarize with some of these guys and maybe learn a little bit more of what you're talking
about? Yeah, it's very unfair, the picture that sometimes gets painted from the combine, and I'm probably at fault more than anybody. The 18 minutes, and these kids are just coming in from the airport, and they're dropping their bags off, and they're getting rushed over to some suite in the dome. And we've had numerous instances where maybe didn't feel great after that short exposure, and then followed up with them either here or on their campus, and then really come out of it with a different opinion. So that is a critical element. And some of these players, they try to think that we want something other than who they really are, because I think that's the best thing, is just for us to try to identify who they really are, what they're going to be like in September and October and November, and not maybe what they think they, we want them to be in April.
When you look at these receivers, right, they're big guys, they're small, how do you weigh that? Because, you look at your group of receivers now, a lot of them are primarily bigger guys. How do you evaluate them?
I think you look at opportunities and production, how they catch the ball, how they protect the ball, their willingness to block. Some schools don't ask them to go in there and block. Some of them are running routes, are running, RPOs or relief routes and trying to pull out defenders that way. What routes have they asked them to run, right? Some guys, it's like, well, he doesn't run it. Well, they probably only have 12 or 14 plays, or they're not running that much of a route tree. How much can he understand and explain about coverage? I think those are all ways that we identify how they play without the ball, how they play with the ball. Are they tough to tackle? Is this a player that's got really good play strength? Can they play inside? Can they return punts? There's a lot of things that we look at.
What do you guys see in this tight end?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good mix. You've got some guys that are dual players. They can play kind of on the line of scrimmage, as well as have the athleticism to detach and play away from the line of scrimmage. There's some guys that can make those move blocks, some of the things that we ask to do, maybe from the backfield. And then you've got guys who, really they're more detached players. They play predominantly in the slot or on a wing position, and they're pass catchers. But even those guys, the guys that we've watched, there's at least a competitiveness as blockers. To at least try to get their nose dirty a little bit in the run game.
John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, a little pre-draft presser today. Wanted to hear how they would handle the AJ Brown questions. We'll come back and talk about it and wrap up the second hour. We'll talk. We'll have a lot of fun to begin the third hour as well with our buddy. We'll do that. All things on tap here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caller 6 right now. We're at First Horizon Park. First pitch, 6:35. Beautiful night for Sounds Baseball. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Richard Deitch coming up at high noon. But how about caller 6 right now on our phone line? 615-737-1025. You're going to win MLB Show 22. Super fun for both hardcore and casual baseball gamers. No matter what your play style, MLB Show 22 has you covered. You can get it now on PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo consoles. At show.com. Rated for everyone. Rated E for everyone. So there you go. We wanted to hear how John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, of course it was all John Robinson, would handle the AJ Brown questions. We knew they were going to get asked the AJ Brown questions. I understand there's nothing that they can really say, but this is the topic. I was a little surprised when John Robinson asked, "What do you think about the wide receiver market exploding?" I'm not really familiar with it, or I don't remember how exactly he answered, but it was like,
"No, he said there is an ebb and flow at different positions, different years,
And he used the example of safety where it went the other direction. The market was flooded with safeties, and they were able to grab Kenny Vaccaro off the street for a very low price right before the training camp. So he's talking about the rise and fall.
When Pollard, was it Pollard that went down? Who went down?
It was the kid, the guy that got, for, you know, the real estate guy who was the really good guy from Jacksonville.
Jonathan Cyprian. Thank you. Jonathan Cyprian,
so
that's right.
He was talking about it can go either way, right? Sometimes there is an availability of getting guys for not a lot, and then there's other times where it costs a lot for a certain position. I think he was acknowledging with that answer that, yes, the market is definitely being challenged right now by these receivers. But what he didn't say was whether he's going to buckle.
Jump in that pool or not jump in that pool.
But what he wanted to make sure that he said was, we want A.J. Brown here. We want him to be a Titan.
But he was very careful.
We are not trading him.
No, that's not what he said.
We don't foresee.
He was very careful. I do not foresee us trading him. We've made it very clear how we feel about him. But then I wanted to hear if he would say what you just said, and he did not say that. He was very careful with his words, which is smart. I mean, why would you ever say that? That's you. If somebody comes to you like the Jets with a ridiculous offer, I mean, you would have to heavily consider that.
But I thought, okay, you tell me though. I like that answer. Because he left himself a little wiggle room.
I
if
like
he's
the answer
blown
too.
Away.
It's the right answer.
But he's also trying to signal to A.J. Brown, look, you can do whatever you want on the thing that was funny, I thought, was like, I'm really not aware of the Facebook or the Snapchat or
Instagram,
the Instagram, whatever may be happening there. And obviously he's aware of it, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like he's sitting on his computer going, what did he say? Because at the end of the day, and we discussed this a lot yesterday, I think you've got to stick to your guns. You've got to really trust yourself to set the value you think is right for that player. And you've got to be willing to be patient. I do think there are a few parallels. It's a different sport. It's a different system. But I think David Poyle is doing some of the same thing with Philip Forsberg. He's got a very good idea in his mind what Philip Forsberg is worth, and he's willing to wait it out. At the end of the day, he wants Philip Forsberg, but he doesn't want to go wild and overpay. I think there's a little bit of the same with John Robinson, right? He knows, John Robinson does, that the only thing that A.J. Brown can do is hold out. He's a Titan. He's under contract with the Titans. So it's not even like Philip Forsberg, who could walk, right, at
July
the end of the
1st,
day.
Yeah.
David Poyle knows he can offer Philip Forsberg more than anybody else. That's what David Poyle has going for him. But Philip Forsberg is a free agent. Mm-hmm. A.J. Brown is under contract with the Titans. They want A.J. Brown, but they have the leverage. The only leverage that A.J. Brown has is to, A, hold out, and
which
B,
then he starts
go
getting
crazy
fined,
with the...
But then he starts getting fined.
Yes.
And he doesn't make a ton of money right now. I mean, considering.
Yes.
Considering. He does not make a ton of money.
Because he's on the first contract.
Yes.
And it's a second-round
contract.
Second-round
pick.
And so you can have conversations publicly on social media all you want about what you think you're worth. But at the end of the day, what is the team that has you under contract offering? And that's where I hope that if he wants to be here, I think it's pretty clear the Titans want him here, that they get the best deal possible there.
Well, it's very rare that you see in any workplace where you go more than 10 times your current salary as a raise. People get raises all the time. You can get a significant raise. But rarely do you go more than 10 times your current salary. And that's what we talked about with other sports, especially like in baseball, like the Acuna deal and others. And it's happened with the Predators in hockey. You can give them a significant raise that you at the early age, basically you're banking on them. You see something, you know something there, and they're getting a jump on their earnings if they're willing to do that. But it's not the jump where, like, Mookie Betts got with the Dodgers. Because if you remember, it's like the Red Sox are like, yeah, we don't want to pay. Okay, we're going to go to arbitration. Okay, fine. So you're going to go from making $800,000 a year to we'll give you $10 million. Okay? So he plays for $10 million. And then it's like, yeah, we don't want to give you that $250 million contract. Let's go to arbitration again. Okay, well, fine. Then we'll go give you $20 million. You're going to pay him $20 million this year. And so it's the gradual, right? It's the same deal with David Poyle has done this. You pay them above and beyond what they are valued at that point, but by the end you're hoping like, wow, that's a steal. But you don't ever see – the deal is never Acuna signs a $225 million contract with the Braves at 21 years of age. It's not that. It's $100 million, mm-hmm. which by the time – well, it's already there. But by the end, it's a laughable contract for the Braves.
Yes, but they recognize
this market
Acuna,
is saying
– Acuna is almost a generational talent. At least that's what they believed – when they signed that, and they saw his number. A.J. Brown is, as we've been talking about, he's a number one wide receiver, but he is not a generational superstar yet. And I don't know if he will get there.
All you're doing is projecting.
But you don't overpay for a projection.
Correct.
You want a discount.
That's what I'm getting at. You're not going the $225 million contract for a guy that you are projecting.
Yes.
You say, hey, we're going to give you a raise. We believe in you. You're our guy. But you're not giving him the ultimate raise.
Right.
But that's what A.J. Brown and this market
is what they're sort of pushing.
They're pushing for, hey, we not only want the raise, we want the ultimate raise like we're already there. Like we're already a top five receiver in the league, which you're not. You're not a top 10 receiver in the league. Again, we put this out yesterday. What was it? He was the 46th best receiver in the league last year.
If you look at Football Outsiders and how they rank wide receivers in terms of efficiency, in each of the metrics, he's between 40 and 50, 42, 44, 46. And so it was not nearly as good. Now, he was higher in his first couple years than that. But it illustrates last year that he played hurt for a number of games. He missed a couple games. And his numbers were not as efficient, even though he still did enough to where you sit there and go, we need that guy. He made the difference in some big, big games. The playoff game, the game against the 49ers obviously stands out.
He's
the guy. When he's right, he is a clear number one.
But you'd have to do it
but
for 17 games.
Season, yeah, at the end of the season, you have to look at what a guy did.
Yeah, it's the full body of work. It's not just games.
Yards. Yeah.
Like, you can't pay somebody more than 10 times their salary because of some games that we can all handpick. Yeah. Like, you have to do the full body work. What I know John Robinson would love to do, Willie, in my opinion, that is laughable. I understand, because A.J. Brown would never agree to it. His agent is never going to agree to it. But I'm sure John Robinson would love to tell them, we believe in you. You're our guy. How about you prove it? We'll give you 2 years guaranteed. At 10 per year. We're giving you a big raise. 10 per year, guaranteed. 2 year, $20 million deal. Go prove it. Go become the guy that we think you can become. And then let's talk the big bucks. Like I said, I'm sure John Robinson would love to do it. Maybe he's even tried. I don't know. We know it's going to be laughed at. Like, that's not going to happen. But that is more reasonable to what we're talking about. Okay, we're going to give you a big bump in pay. We'll do it on a small window. You go prove that you're the guy. You're the guy in the league. Remember, to be 20, 25, 30 million a year, you've got to be the guy in the league. Go prove that. We'll give you the big contract. But we know that's not going to happen.
That's how it should happen, but that is – he has more leverage than that, I think, A.J. Brown does. But it's going to end up being, I think, A.J. Brown is going to have to decide how much – is he willing to hold out?
Let's come back third hour. Richard Deitch. We always love our conversations with him. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.